also here.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy Gene Show.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy Gene Show. James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, here we go. Off and running with the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. So good to have all of you along with us today. We'll try and have an entertaining program for you and informative as well, trying to get things balanced out here in the studio. When you're in here fooling around trying to tune things up, you're never quite sure if you've got everything just right, so I'm not sure we do today. But anyway, we're going to live with it, and I hope we're coming through loud and clear. And I do want you to know you are listening to the Guy James Show, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Fort Myers, Naples area, Florida. Wonder how many of you saw that little news deal they had on MSNBC today about Fort Myers. We made the news again and again and again, as they say. They built a couple new big towers downtown right on the river, on the Caloosahatchee River. By the way, without question, one of the most beautiful rivers in America. A lot of people never even heard of the Caloosahatchee River, but it's big and it's wide and it's beautiful here in Fort Myers. And they built a couple of new residential towers, condo towers down there, and each of them have 200 units in it. And as things were wont to go here a couple of years ago, things started to crash. And it turns out in one of those towers, there are 200 units and only one condo being occupied. Imagine living in a 200-unit condo building. I don't know how many floors. I don't know, 20, whatever, 30. And you're the only place in it. It's scary. And they're negotiating back and forth with the bank, trying to get them to trade out to another unit and another building and whatnot. But what a weird situation was, and we were on the national news again. That's nothing new. This area has been on the national news a lot because of real estate issues. That's for sure. How are you today? How are you getting along? How was your weekend? Did you go out wine, women, and song, and all that sort of thing? Did you go to the lake? Did you go to the swimming pool? Did you have a backyard barbecue? It's summer after all. Got to admit, I had my first sweet corn the other day. As many of you may know, the produce that they grow here in Florida, and let me explain to those of you that haven't listened for a long time. I'm a 12 and a half year resident of Florida, and the produce grown here is okay. But it's certainly nothing to write home about, especially the sweet corn and the tomatoes are just no good. You just can't grow good tomatoes and sweet corn down here. I don't know, for some reason. Anyway, I got a hold of some good Urbana, Ohio sweet corn over the weekend, and I thought I had died and gone to heaven. Oh, it was so good to have some great sweet corn again. So, somebody mail me a bushel of that corn, okay? The Guy James Show, you'll find it on the website. A bushel, half bushel will do. I'll sit down and eat about half of it at one sitting, I think, if it's as good as what I had the other day. But wonderful to have those delights, those things you miss from back home. Although this is home and has been for a dozen years, there are certain things you miss, and good produce is one of them. So, wow, it was right. ELO says she's going to get right on it. She's going to mail me, UPS me, a peck basket of good sweet corn. That'll do. I don't have to have a whole bushel. Oh, I was asking how you're doing. Hey, I was watching reading our local newspaper here, and it's a real treat. I wish I could find a way to publish it on my website. Maybe I'll be able to do that, because I know you would enjoy it. My listeners would enjoy the newspaper here. My listeners would enjoy the local 5:30 to 9 in the morning radio show. The rest of the radio shows here are the syndicated crap that, you know, everybody else has with the Glenn Beck. And we'll talk about Glenn Beck a little later in the program. Oh, maybe I should talk about him now. What is it with the Glenn Beck phenomenon? Don't take this as any kind of jealousy or envy or anything like that. What I do not understand is, I do not understand how a Glenn Beck can, in a few months, become a Pied Piper of every frickin' lunatic that resides in the United States. I know people who are so damn proud of the fact that they follow Glenn Beck. For example, I know a local businessman. Actually, he's not a businessman, but his father and his mother own a large chain. I shouldn't say it's a large chain, but I don't know, maybe 25, 30 stores. That's pretty large to me. Of tire stores. Tires and auto repair and all that. Kind of like the Tuffy Muffer shops and all that, only it's not that. And I'm not going to say the name here. Floridians will know who I'm talking about. But I know the son of the people that own this thing, and they have started advertising sponsoring Glenn Beck. And they are thrilled to tell you that they have Glenn Beck, they're sponsoring Glenn Beck. They've all become followers of Glenn Beck, and Glenn can do no wrong. Of course, in an area like this where it's 2-1, conservatives against liberals, why, I guess it doesn't hurt their business any. I, for one, used to do business with them because I knew the family and I knew the son. And so I'd buy my tires and have minor auto repair done there, but never again. What the hell is wrong with people that would hook up Glenn Beck's name with their business? I know it's to make money. I know that. But people have made money off of Charles Manson. I don't understand why for a dollar, to make a dollar, you would hook up with somebody like a Glenn Beck. And I notice now that he's everywhere around here. Many, many businesses in this area have hired Glenn Beck and paid him $10,000 to make commercials for him that they play on the local right-wing radio station. You hear Glenn Beck all day long on the right-wing radio station here. Many. A local kitchen cupboard company now has Glenn Beck extolling the virtues. And you know how he does these commercials. Have you heard him? Well, I've known these folks for many years, and they run their business the right way. The honest way, the good old American way. They're American business people because I, Glenn Beck, have said so. Oh, my God, it makes me want to puke. You should hear it. I don't know if there's some place. Do any of you, are any of you exposed to that as well, where you live, that Glenn Beck has just taken over? You can't monitor a program for any length of time whatsoever, but goddamn Glenn Beck comes on and starts in. Well, I love these folks because they do business the old-fashioned way, the American way, with honesty and integrity. Like Glenn Beck is some sort of an example of honesty and integrity. He's a shill. Glenn Beck is a clown. He's a cartoon character. And people take him serious, and it's driving me nuts. I suppose he would enjoy the fact that it's driving me nuts, but how can you, as a thinking person, have anything to do with Glenn Beck? The man's insane. And here he is on in prime time making millions of dollars and all that. Yes, I probably sound envious. I probably sound jealous. I'm not. I'm appalled. I'm appalled at the number of people, the American public, the stupidity of the Americans who will sit and listen to a guy like Glenn Beck. That's right, Glenn. Oh, well, don't get me started on that. Don't get me started on that. Why am I telling you not to get me started? I got me started on that. And the local radio station here. I'm telling you, if you want to hear something that's a real laugh, and I'm telling you it is actually humorous, they have a local host that comes on here in the morning, and it's in the most listened to AM radio station around. Her name is Mandy. I don't know. She's 40-something. Got a high school education. She is the show host until 9 o'clock, extolling the virtues of every right-winger who ever lived. Of course, their station follows up with Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, Michael Savage, not Michael Savage after that, Glenn Beck, Michael Wiener, and then the right-wingers the rest of the night, all night long. Of course, George Norrie at night. It's a lineup of crazies. And they call in to this local show in the morning. The locals here do. Of course, this is right-wing heaven, you know. And the phone calls that they get at this local station, WINK it is, the phone calls they get to this local show agreeing with this Mandy, this radio, oh, my God, when you hear that, you're afraid to get in your car and drive out in the public because you know what's out there. One insane phone call after another. That's right, Mandy, whatever you said, by God. You know, these crackers, these right-wing crackers that live here, they're freaking dangerous. I've had people here, you know, and many of you know about this, in the past, when I was on that very station, threatened to kill me, send me emails that they're waiting out back with a rifle. That's what kind of a community this is politically. Lunatics. Right-wing lunatics. This is heaven for them. Say, oh, guy, how can you talk about your own community that way? Believe me, I do look over my shoulder now and then. It's amazing. This woman on the local radio show comes up with the most idiotic logic you ever have ever heard in your life. Somebody did get a letter to the editor sneaked into the local newspaper the other day and said that she had, you know, seventh grade logic or high school logic or whatever it was, and it's so true. It's so true, and yet, and she's got the most annoying, whiny, horrible radio voice you've ever heard. The thing is, you know, nowadays, if you're on in the local market, this isn't a huge market, they work for practically nothing. But she's the local morning radio host, and evidently that means more than money. Because I know what they pay, and it's practically zip. Oh, why did I go off on that? I don't know. And as you know, I don't have to tell you I watched Rachel Maddow last night, a bit of her show, and she was using the word thuggish a lot, and I certainly agree with that. The Republicans are doing anything and everything that they possibly can to complicate things with this health care issue. They're doing everything they possibly can to interfere with town hall meetings that politicians may be having around the country, putting plants in amongst the local crowd to disrupt these meetings and make them so that they are not valuable for the politicians going back home trying to explain the health care program that hasn't been explained very well. I certainly will agree with that. But they're being given marching orders by a Washington think tank group led by none other than Mr. Dick Armey of Texas, SOB that he is. They have been caught red-handed with this, that these grassroots campaigns that they talk about, like their teabag parties, oh, it was a grassroots issue, like hell it was. It was carefully orchestrated right out of Washington, D.C., just like all these town hall disruptors are being carefully orchestrated right out of Washington, D.C., right out of Dick Armey's office. Spread yourself out around the room. Shout down the congressman or his representative, whoever it may be. All raise your hands at once. Sit toward the front if you can so it looks like you are the majority in the room. Give the Democrats the Nazi salute. Ashley had one of them the other day. I suppose you've all heard by now the, this shows the intelligence of these people. I forget which congressman it was. One of these people stood up and said, Congressman so-and-so, keep the government's hands off of my Medicare. Keep the government's hands off of my Medicare. Oh, my. Hey, I do want to remind you that Dr. Margaret Flowers of the Physicians for National Health Program is going to be with us around 3:30. As you know, we've had her on before. We had her on before, I guess, the day after she was arrested and thrown in the pokey for disrupting Max Baucus's Senate hearings on the health care. Wonderful lady. She is a practicing physician, and she's going to be with us around 3:30, and we're going to talk about health care. We'll probably talk about health care quite a lot today. Did want to mention the birthers. Did any of you see this Dr. Orly Tate? Or is that how her name is pronounced? Dr. Orly Tate. She's in Tel Aviv now. She was from South Carolina, Charleston, someplace like that, who is one of these birthers. Going on and on and on about this birth certificate that she swears that Obama was not born in the United States, was born in South Africa, and of course she has proof of it, and she had this birth certificate, and all we now know for a fact, that it was Kenyan. This Kenyan birth document is a fake. It is a forgery. Actually, it's a forgery of a man, some poor sucker down in Adelaide, in Australia. Friend had his birth certificate on the internet, and they took this thing and they forged Barack Obama's name onto it somehow, and are claiming that that is the real birth certificate of Barack Obama. A fake Kenyan birth certificate. And this guy by the name of David Jeffrey Bomford, he says, definitely a copy of my certificate. It's so laughable, it's ridiculous. They're going to take it down off the website. But that's what happened. Who was it that got caught with that? G. Gordon Liddy. G. Gordon Liddy had his on his show. Why, it's the truth. This is the truth because I said it's the truth. We have this birth certificate, and it's the real thing. Barack Obama was born in Kenya. Never mind that his birth announcement was announced in the Honolulu newspaper, two newspapers in Hawaii. And it was a hoot trying to watching this Dr. Orley Tates, this attorney, trying to explain that one, that the parents of Barack Obama could have somehow known when he was born that he would end up being president, so that they had to fake his birth certificate in Hawaii. It was a real kick watching that. Lou Dobbs sticking to his story. I'm disgusted with CNN, and I may swear them off until they get rid of Lou Dobbs. Let's face it. In the last 2 or 3 years, or longer, Lou Dobbs has turned into a crackpot. He was fairly respected. He was pretty much a guy that would talk about business. Now he's deep into politics, and he's getting more and more weird as time goes by. Definitely getting very weird. But then again, somebody has to play to the 53% of Southerners. 53% of Southerners who think that Barack Obama, or no, they're not sure, or they don't think he was born in America, or they're not sure. 53%. If you live in the South, and you're listening to this broadcast, and you are of the liberal progressive persuasion, are you not scared to walk out of your door at night or in the afternoon or any other time, where knowing that the guy across the street and the guy next door to you believes that Barack Obama was born in Kenya because Lou Dobbs said so and G. Gordon Liddy said so, that they've got that kind of intelligence? Don't get me started. I'm having one of those don't get me started days. But it is fascinating to me that people are so ignorant and low. Maybe I should say I was being kind. Ignorant, you know, you can be very intelligent and be ignorant of certain subjects. I am ignorant of nuclear physics. I am completely ignorant. Know very, very little about it. I am ignorant about many subjects, and most of you are as well, unless you're just an absolute genius that has covered the board in education. But 53% of the people in the South believe anything they hear, evidently, and that shows me a little more than ignorance. That's indicative of, dare I say, stupidity. Going to talk about the South a little later on in the program and about their political proclivities. And I did want to mention today, I didn't want to let the day go by without mentioning this new book out by the political $2 whore, Michelle Malkin. I don't know how many of you have ever sat down and tried to write a book. But we've had Barack Obama as president, a little over 6 months. And Michelle Malkin has written a 376-page book called Out Culture of Corruption, Obama and His Team of Tax Cheats, Crooks, and Cronies. 376-page book. Have you ever sat down and tried to write a book? It's a very slow process. It's like sitting down with a pile of rocks and have somebody tell you to build pyramids with it, okay? I mean, it's to have written a book about the presidency, which is yet to go on longer than the average baseball season, requires either some sort of a huge research and writing skills or the employment of some really creative time-saving measures. It's 376 pages. And I know there are some listeners in the audience today that are in the publishing industry, and the idea that a book, yes, we have an office that always listens to the show every day in New York City on 6th Avenue. I hear from them every day. Not every day, almost every day. But to write and edit and revise and do the typeset and print a book in that amount of time would be just absolutely amazing. So that gives you an idea what kind of book this is. And then, of course, it goes right to the top of the Amazon bestseller list. Right behind Glenn Beck's Common Sense. Now, who buys this crap? And do they really read it? Or do they consider it some sort of a contribution to the cause? I guess the question should be asked anybody that would buy a Michelle Malkin book or a Glenn Beck book. Can they read? But just skim the comments about this book. And here we, for example, here's a here's a comment about the book. It says, Mrs. Malkin did her homework and the facts, figures, and resource information presented in this cogent, well-crafted, invaluable book. Make for a must-read. Well, that's used in every book, must-read. Culture of Corruption will confirm what many have long suspected about this president and his administration. Long suspected? How long? Or will be a real eye-opener for Obama supporters who went along for the ride for no other reason than the catchy slogans and still don't get why they ought to be alarmed. As an aside, this illuminating book dovetails handsomely with the important work Ms. Malkin does every day on her blog site, keeping this citizenry informed. Thank you, Ms. Malkin, and keep on fighting the good fight. Now, this book review was written on July 28th, 12 hours after the book was released. So the person who wrote that review, unless they worked for the publisher and were privy to advanced copies, they didn't even read it. Michelle Malkin, blogger, political commentator, and author extraordinaire. Who reads that crap? Really would like to know. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in just a moment or two, and we will try during the break to get a hold of our guest coming up. So don't go away, okay?
Something taken out of my soul. Something I I've been looking for. In the middle of the night, I go walking in my sleep, through the jungle of doubt, to the river so deep. I know I'm searching for something, something so undefined.
We have with us this afternoon our guest, Dr. Margaret Flowers. Dr. Flowers, are you there?
I'm here.
Well, thank you for joining us this afternoon. The last time we spoke, you were fresh out of prison. a long stretch chained to a bench, and as I recall, something like 5 hours in the afternoon.
That's right.
I can't remember what the statement was that you made that I thought was so funny. You said when something or other, when you're chained to a bench for 5 hours, you meet lots of people, and something or other about talking about the guards, but I remember it being the understatement of the day. It's so good to have you with us today, because I know you are deeply, deeply immersed in this fight for decent health care for people here in the country, and in the Physicians for National Health Program and other organizations you're with. People sometimes have the feeling that doctors are not necessarily in favor of a health care program from the United States, but you're here to tell them differently, are you not?
That's correct. I mean, other than the experience that we have going around and speaking with many physicians, is also we have polling data that's from 2 years ago that indicates that 59% of physicians across the nation support a national health program. I'm sure it's grown since then. That was a 10% increase in just a five-year period. And especially when you talk to primary care providers such as me or to psychiatrists, it's very high, support for a national health program.
Why? Explain both sides, if you can, please.
Both sides of why they support that?
Of this argument. Why are you for it? I know why you're for it. why are the people, what's the main argument against it from physicians?
I think the main thing for physicians is a lack of knowledge, really, of what it is that we're talking about. There's so much misinformation out there. They worry, they hear the same rhetoric that everybody else does, that it's going to be government controlled and they won't have any say over their income and that, you know, their salaries will be cut. I think that's why specifically you see less support among those who are in the specialties. Who do have very high salaries, you know, over $1 million a year, and they realize under national health system that's going to come down a little bit.
Well, I could live on that, really, but
you
mentioned they hear the same rhetoric that others hear. I, for one, and I know many people that I've talked to, feel that the administration has done a very, very poor job of getting the message out of what the health plan. I guess what I'm to sum it all up with, does anybody know what the health care plan that's going to come up is right now? Does anybody know?
Well, we know what our plan is. HR 676 and S703 is spelled out very clearly in less than 100 pages. But what they're doing right now in Congress, you know, they had the three committees of jurisdiction in the House each wrote up separate health care bills. And that all has to be what's called reconciled during the month of August. The members of those three committees, their staff, will be meeting with the leadership to try to take what was put into the three bills and three committees and make it one bill. On the Senate side, we do have a bill that came out of the HELP Committee, Health, Education, Labor, and Pension. Senate Finance Committee is the other committee that's working on the health bill. Of course, they're having a lot more difficulty in the Senate Finance Committee, but we know the general gist of what's in it, and it's not good. Dr. Angel summed it up very well last week on Bill Moyers when she said it's just taking what we currently have and putting more money into it. It's not really reform at all. The president has even stopped calling it health care reform. He now calls it health insurance reform, and I think that's significant because what we really were hoping for was health care reform.
just pouring more money into an old car rather than getting a new one.
Exactly.
We really need a new one. How do you feel about it right now? What do you think the chances are for coming out, coming up with a meaningful plan? I know we'll get something. Everybody knows we'll get something. Whether it's worth anything or not is anyone's guess.
I think as far as a meaningful plan, it's very unlikely. It's even possible that they don't, you know, they aren't able to pass a plan this year. We did have a very significant development within the single-payer movement this past week. It came at the end of a very busy week of single-payer activity on the Hill with a lot of events. We had a rally on Thursday to celebrate Medicare's 44th anniversary. We had about 1,200 citizens, doctors, in the halls of Congress that day. And the next day, Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, said that she would allow a debate on the floor of the full House and a vote on an amendment introduced by Representative Wiener from New York that would substitute the single-payer bill for the current health legislation being considered. So we see that as a real opportunity to at least have some debate about single-payer. Several of our representatives came out at that committee hearing very strongly saying, you know, this is the only solution that's going to save money. It's the only solution that's going to cover everybody. It's the only common sense, you know, solution to have a single-payer system.
Well, I must admit, I must give the other side credit. They've come up with a massive amount of resistance. They've come up with a massive amount of propaganda. Dick Armey, as we know, has done a great job getting people out to disrupt the meetings that are taking place around the country. It's a very difficult situation right now, don't you think?
It is very much. There's also a lot of misinformation floating around on the Internet that we're seeing. Emails going out, some of them looking very official, which cite page numbers from the legislation, and they just pretty much contain complete misinformation in them, just things to scare people that they're going to lose what they have and such things as that. So I do urge your listeners to be very careful when they see information coming around to question the validity of it.
And, of course, we're going to euthanize all the old people.
Right, right.
I actually have talked to people who, unfortunately, are worried about that.
That's really amazing because that, I understand, was actually a provision introduced by the Republicans previously saying that seniors should have, you know, be allowed to have end-of-life counseling to determine, you know, what sort of measures they would like to have taken when they get close to the end of their life. It's more on the lines of a death with dignity, not euthanasia by any means.
Well, they've certainly come up with some crazy rhetoric during this whole thing. I'm just appalled at the polls, the way they're going, and that. Well, I am encouraged that at least today the meeting that Barack Obama had with several of the Democratic senators, Harry Reid came out and said they're going to pass a plan with the Republicans or without the Republicans. But the problem is, what's the plan?
Right. Right. And that's why it's so important for us to continue pushing, to continue to make the discussion be about health care, not about propping up more of the same private insurers that have done so much damage already, and for people to make sure that they're talking to others and educating themselves as we move forward with this.
Have you seen any progress? I know when you had your troubles, there's been, a couple of months ago now?
Right, that was in May.
May, June, July, okay. I remember back then that Max Baucus, he wasn't doing much. He's in bed with the healthcare providers and the insurance companies. I don't think there's any question about that. Have you seen any change in him at all, and any giving on his part?
Not much change in him. He certainly has taken a lot of heat from his Montana constituents, who are an excellent group of people. They've started campaigns such as Help Us Buy Back Our Senator. Because he receives the majority of his campaign funds from outside of the state of Montana. But we did see a lot of movement in terms of single-payer in the other committees. Senator Kennedy invited me to testify before his committee in June, which I did. I was able to say on the record that health care is a right and that the market has failed when it comes to health care. We also had representatives testify in the three committees of jurisdiction in the House. We had other hearings, such as a hearing on bankruptcy, where we were able to testify about the fact that the majority of our bankruptcies in this country, 62%, are due to medical debt, and 80% of those people had health insurance when they encountered, you know, when they got this medical debt. So health insurance is really not protective in this country.
Would that we had more senators with the American people's interest in mind on yes. health care, as is Ted Kennedy. I don't think we'd have any problem getting a meaningful health care bill that we'd all be pretty much we'd all like, if we, but there aren't enough Senator Kennedys when it comes to that.
There aren't. There's a real lack of courage on the Senate side compared to the House side. It's much more obvious over there that the control of the private corporations in the Senate.
As we often say on this program, it's a dream, and I know it's a pipe dream, but wouldn't it be something if every elected official went in to vote on every issue that he went in to vote on, and the primary concern, first thing in his mind was, is this good or bad for the people?
Right.
But it is not the primary concern to very many of them because of campaign contributions and wanting to keep their jobs, and that's a shameful, shameful situation. So, they keep talking about we're going to have a single, this will be a first step toward a single payer.
Mm-hmm.
If we do these co-ops and all, this will be a first step. I think that's baloney, don't you?
It is baloney. There's no evidence at all in this country, when we've had similar reforms over the past 30 years, that it has really moved anywhere in that direction at all. In fact, when we keep the private insurance industry front and center, we may see an improvement through things like expanding Medicaid or giving subsidies to purchase private insurance, that we see a small improvement for a year or two, but every time it's ended up failing due to cost in the long run. So it's really disheartening to see them continue doing more of the same that we've seen fail over and over again, when we know that Medicare, which was created 44 years ago to cover all of our senior citizens and disabled, has worked very well for that population. So many people in their early 60s look forward to the day when they can get Medicare when they turn 65. We'd like to see that for everybody.
Did you see the clip of that gentleman at one of those town halls standing up and telling one of the congressmen, keep the government's hands off of my Medicare?
Yeah, that's the first time we've heard that.
I love that. That's one of the best ones I think I've ever heard. As I recall, in our last conversation, I think I recall, your husband is a physician. Is he not a practicing physician?
That's right. He's a surgeon.
He's a surgeon. And can you give us any anecdotal stories on what he's seen about people not being able to get proper care and the surgery they may need and all the decisions that are made by insurance companies?
Definitely. He comes home all the time, with stories of, insurance companies canceling surgeries, or when he had one young man who had very severe sleep apnea where his breathing was obstructed at night, and the young man needed to have his tonsils taken out, so my husband wanted to do a little bit of further surgery to make it so he wouldn't have that breathing stoppage at night and wouldn't need to be on a machine at night, and the insurance company turned him down, even though, it would make more sense, it would save them more money and make the young man's life much more comfortable. And my husband tried to appeal it over and over and was never able to even get through to somebody with medical training. Another very recent, a 42-year-old man with high blood pressure who had insurance but couldn't afford his medications for the whole month, only about half a month's worth. So he would take the medication for half a month and then not for half a month. And he came in with a very severely high blood pressure. He'd already done damage to his kidneys, had some bleeding in his brain. So here he is at 42. He was admitted to the intensive care unit with severe high blood pressure. He's heading towards dialysis. He has some cognitive effects from the bleeding in his brain, so that he won't be productive, won't be able to work like he could have. And this is just a huge waste of the people in our country. It's such a huge shame that this has to happen, that this is not an unusual story.
And that's something, normally blood pressure medication isn't even all that expensive, is it?
It's not. Probably one night in the intensive care unit would have paid for his whole year's worth of medication and kept him healthy and productive and having a much better quality of life. It's such a crime.
It is. I when you hear stories like that, it just makes you want to work all the harder for this. Dr. Flowers, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. I know that you will fight till the the very end on this, and your group is probably the most tenacious that there is on this, wouldn't you say?
So we are part of the Leadership Conference for Guaranteed Healthcare, and we're going to keep this up and keep growing and keep working. We've made some progress this year. We know that we can continue, and I just urge all your listeners to write to their members of Congress and let them know that this is what we want, a national healthcare plan based on single payer, Medicare for everyone, and that they need to respond to the needs of the people, not to their corporate dollars.
Well, we'll keep after everybody, and our listeners will keep after their people as well. And I do want to thank you for being on the program, and I want to thank you once again for fighting the good fight.
Thank you,
Dr. Margaret Flowers. Thank you.
Bye.
Very delightful lady, Dr. Flowers. We've talked to her off the air a few times. She is a pediatrician, and her husband is a surgeon. They know this. The 16,000 members of their organization know the problems that they run across. Just the two stories she gave us right here, her husband can go on and on and on, and most surgeons can go on and on and on and tell stories like that as well. Of people that, but for a few $100 or a few bucks, could have been saved a life of misery, could have saved their lives. All for a buck, all for profit. All for these people that sit in these ivory towers at the insurance companies and make life and death decisions. Like she said, he couldn't even talk to anybody that had medical training about canceling a surgery for somebody that was oh so necessary. A life-changing surgery. But no. Someone sat in their bureaucratic office in, well, not a bureaucratic office, but in their profit center, insurance company office, and had a chart on the wall. Profit had needed to be made that month, that week, that day, whatever, and said, no, you can't have the surgery because we'd have to spend some of our profit. And how would we be able to pay our CEO $5 million, $10 million, $21 million a year if we let this guy have surgery? So cut off every surgery you possibly can. And I've heard this story over and over and over, and I know many of you have as well from physicians and from doctors and nurses all over. They'll tell you that story over and over again. So what? So what if a guy had to be on a breathing machine the rest of his life at night because of sleep apnea? When a few $100 more for that surgery could have cured him of that. So what? That's his life. That's his tough luck. It makes me sick. It just makes me sick. If you'd like to join the program. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us today. I was encouraged to see Chuck Schumer and Harry Reid come out of the White House today and say that the president had given them a big pep talk. And I was encouraged to hear Chuck Schumer say, in so many words, that they may just say to hell with the Republicans, that they might be willing to bypass the Republicans on the health bill. Doesn't mean it's going to be a great health bill, but they're willing to, they say they won't hesitate to forego bipartisanship to pass a health overhaul bill if the negotiations fail in the next month. The Wall Street Journal just came out with a story not just a couple of hours ago. Schumer said in a conference call with reporters that the Democratic leaders are actively exploring options to pass the health bill that wouldn't require Republican votes. He pointed specifically to budget reconciliation, a parliamentary tactic that would allow passage of a bill with a simple majority rather than the 60 votes generally required in the Senate. Reconciliation is clearly one of the contingencies on the table, Mr. Schumer said, We want to get a bipartisan agreement, but if we don't, it's not going to stop us from moving forward with health care. Well, we will see. I would serve warning, and I know for that reason I wouldn't be in the Senate very long. I would serve the Republicans warning right here, right now, that we don't give a damn what you say from now on, from here on out. If you're going to vote no on everything that we come up with, we will pass everything by a simple majority. We will use the nuclear option, and we don't give a damn what you say. And I think if Harry Reid had any gonads, he would just go ahead and say it right now. Just tell him. You can be the obstructionist party if you want to. You can go ahead and try and obstruct, but from now on, it's not going to do you any good because we have the majority. And in the House, if at least if we can get most of the blue dogs or some of the blue dogs, I think even we can get by without the blue dogs, that we can pass anything we want to right over your heads, whether you like it or not. The Republicans have been playing hardball from day one of this administration. It's time to fight back. Harry Reid said a long time ago, he said in the second Bush term, that he had to pick his battles carefully. Well, he never did pick a battle. Never did pick one. He let the Republicans run over him every time. It's time to put a stop to that, Harry. Or it's time to recall Harry Reid. It's time to put up or shut up. We had a president that ran on change. We had senators running on change. We had them promising to follow the Democratic agenda. And here we are with one of the most important Democratic agenda items that we've had in decades. Think back to when Lyndon Johnson and the Democrats had the courage, and thank God they had, I'm not a big Lyndon Johnson fan, but thank God those men had the courage and the clout to go ahead and pass whatever they needed to pass, and they did, come hell or high water, it didn't matter to them the political consequences. And there were political consequences. Medicaid and Medicare and affirmative action, all those things passed during those times. But it's time to do it again. It's time to railroad everything you want, run that train down the tracks, and if you run over a few Republicans in the way, tough. I believe in trying to do things in a bipartisan manner. I believe in that. But what's the old saying? Can't remember it right now. There's just the best old saying. Quitters never win and winners never quit. But if you never win and you never quit, you're just plain stupid. Well, now's the time, Harry. Now's the time to look the Republicans straight in the eye. Look Mitch McConnell straight in the eye. Do it in public. Do it on the steps of the Capitol building. Do it in front of the old Ohio clock out in front of the Senate chambers and look him in the eye and say, you know what, Mitch? Party's over, bud. Party's over. You boys can whine. You can go in front of the cameras all you want, but we're taking the bull by the horns this time, and we are going to pass a meaningful health care bill that helps everybody in this country that needs it. And you know what, Mitch? We don't give a damn what you say. We don't give a damn what you do, because we can get 51 votes any old day. We don't need 60 because we're going to run right over your head. We're declaring the nuclear option on the table. We tried. We worked with you. We pleaded, we cajoled, we did everything we could to come up with a bipartisan bill. But no, you said no to everything. Every one of you said no to everything. And that would go for any Democrats. And there are many, many, many Democrats that have not committed yet on this most important issue. And you know why they haven't committed yet. Yes, some of them live in red states. And politically, I understand that. But what's more important? Your job or the health of America? Why not be a hero? Why not be a hero if you're a Democrat in a red state and you barely win by the skin of your teeth each time and you know that your constituency may vote you out? Why not be a hero and do the right thing? Man, we'd think so much more of you as an ex-senator that you did the right thing. You always need to do the right thing. As we mentioned with Dr. Flowers, and we've mentioned so many times on this program, and I know it's pie in the sky. I know it's a dream that'll never happen. But wouldn't it be wonderful if every time a politician voted in Washington, D.C., they were voting their conscience? They were voting for what's best for America, and there was no thought of reelection, no thought of campaign contributions, no thought of retribution or anything like that. I'm just going to go in and I'm going to vote for what's right for a change. I'd love to know what the percentage is of people that vote I think Dennis Kucinich is one that goes in and does that. I believe that he is anyway. I don't want to say that I know a lot more that are like that. Russ Feingold, I have great respect for him. I believe Russ votes his conscience and really works hard to vote what's right for Americans. And there are others. But would that we could have all of them that way. Would that we could help, that we could have great patriots in the halls of Congress that would work for us each and every time they voted. And my God, yes, Bernie Sanders. How could I have not mentioned Bernie Sanders? Bernie Sanders is a stand-up guy, and he's got a great conscience. Thanks for reminding me of that. I'd be ashamed of myself if I listened to a rebroadcast of this program and had not mentioned Bernie Sanders on that. Probably at the top of the list. Him and Dennis share the top spot, I would say, in my humble opinion. And I know there are others, but this is so important. And I hate to harp on it day after day after day, but this is the most important thing to come up in a long time. We've got to stay after him on this. We've got to pound them on this, no matter what it takes. We've just got to stay after them on this until they do what's right. And pressure will get to them. It will. Ben Nelson of Nebraska is feeling the heat. Now he's starting to get defensive about the whole thing because there have been some ads run against Ben. And rightly so. Oh, I don't know. Anyway, you are listening to the Guy James Show here on the Hit On Radio Network, and we're going to take a break for the news, and we'll be back right afterwards. Don't go away.
listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. As members of Congress head home to hold conversations with constituents about health care reform, two organizations are hoping to insert static into the dialogue. One of the organizations is Americans for Prosperity, an advocacy group fronted by Tim Phillips, who is a former leader of Ralph Reed's Century Strategies. During Senate investigations, it was learned that Century Strategies helped launder money for Jack Abramoff. Americans for Prosperity is currently paying to bus individuals around the country under the guise of an organization called Patients United Now. The other organization is Freedom Works, which is chaired by former U.S. Congressman Dick Armey. Freedom Works sent out a memo with instructions on how to best astroturf a town hall discussion. In the memo, the organization tells members to fill the front of the hall so the representative is made to feel a significant portion of at least the audience opposes the socialist agenda of Washington. During a town hall meeting in Philadelphia this weekend, the practices encouraged by these two organizations were seen in full effect. Senator Arlen Specter and Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebulis were both shouted down by audience members. And in Texas this weekend, a town hall with Representative Lloyd Doggett devolved into chanting of "Just Say No," prohibiting concerned constituents from asking follow-up questions about the potential health reform legislation. According to a recent article published by Reuters, of the 46 million Americans currently living without health insurance, 6 million of them are in Doggett's state. That gives Texas an uninsured rate of 25%, the highest in the country. 1,200 General Motors workers will be back on the job this week as a plant in Lordstown, Ohio, restarts production. The plant has been under a 9-week shutdown as the company attempts to reduce a glut of inventory. Meanwhile, GM continues to seek a reduction in workers countrywide. According to GM, the latest buyout offer has resulted in 6,000 more hourly workers leaving the company. In 2006, GM had a total of 66,000 U.S. hourly workers. Now the company has reduced that number to 48,000 hourly workers and has a goal of 40,500 by the end of the year. Here is today's economic report. According to the Commonwealth Fund, in 2007, 45% of women accrued medical debt or reported difficulties paying medical bills. That same year, 36% of men reported similar problems. 45% of women delayed or skipped cancer screenings or dental care because of prohibitive costs.
Workers' Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run with those scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get dropped down. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
Yeah.
fellow America. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
And welcome back, everybody. Good to have all of you back with us here on the Guy James Show. Oh my, what a day. Did you see Dick Durbin come out after the president had spoken to them today, and Schumer and Reid and all that, said the president really said he was a real cheerleader today, that they ought to do that every Tuesday at lunch. Evidently the president got feisty in there and got several standing ovations and all that with that meeting today, that they're gonna do this with health. I hope this isn't a bunch of bull from the politicians who get together and say, you know, when it's all over with, see, we passed this health care bill for you. And then you start reading through it and go, well, what? It's good for six people or something. You know, that's what I'm expecting. I'm a cynic. I'm probably as much of a cynic as anybody right now. You know, they're coming up with these co-ops they're talking about. They're a sham. The co-ops are absolutely a sham. They're an insurance company sham. I don't know why people don't know that. You've got these Republicans that have taken, and Democrats as well. I don't want to make this a partisan thing. It's bipartisan as far as some of them being slimy and taking hundreds of thousands of dollars from that industry. But you've got these slimy politicians, and some of these blue dog Democrats who are out there pretending, that these co-ops are really the great way to go, that they're a viable option to the powerful insurance corporations, and that they may be some sort of a really good substitute. I've heard that from several of the blue dogs now. A good substitute for a strong public option. That's BS. They know it. You know it. I know it. Everybody should know it. Anybody with an ounce of sense knows that. These co-ops are nothing more than insurance company plots to fool the public into forgetting about any kind of a public option as an option. We've got these insurance corporations and their lobbyists. They've got unlimited money. They've got all sorts of deregulation, and they'll fight for more. And they'll control those co-ops almost from day one, and they'll make even more profit. Because people are going to be forced into these, you see. They're not going to accept losing any money. Look, they'll lie, they'll cheat, they'll steal, they'll smear, they'll distort the truth, they'll bribe, blackmail, they'll do anything they have to ensure they get these co-ops. And we will not have gained an inch in this battle if that's how this ends up. If we end up without a public option to keep them honest, insurance companies are going to continue to suck us dry. There isn't any question about it. None. Something must be done about that. You know, this is one of those things that isn't a sexy issue to talk about, the insurance. But it's shameful to see how the press and the media is talking about this. Did you see any of Morning Joe this morning? Yeah, I know, puke. Well, just in time to hear Scarborough complaining that the administration's moving too fast. Everybody is always moving too fast. Scarborough thinks Obama declares everything is an emergency, and he moves too fast and everything. When they passed that stimulus bill, that recovery bill, the economy was in free fall, headed for a depression, not a severe recession, a depression. And there wasn't any end in sight. And it's still not looking good, but at least it slowed it down, don't you think? And there is an emergency in the health care. It is an emergency, as you've heard over and over and over again. There are 14,000 Americans on the average losing their health care coverage every single day. And the people who still have health insurance are paying higher premiums every month. And they're at risk of not being properly covered if they get sick. A lot of people can't even afford the deductibles. Isn't that something? You pay insurance premiums that are sky high, and something serious happens, and the deductibles take them down the tubes. You see all these people on TV. You see the guys like Scarborough and your Lou Dobbs and your Sean Hannitys and people like that. How'd they like to lose their job and then their health insurance and then come up with some kind of cancer? That happens every day, thousands of times. 66% of all bankruptcies are triggered by medical expenses. And you get guys like Scarborough, he's you know, I don't dozens and dozens of hours on his show, defending torture as a legitimate means to prevent a terrorist attack. He, you know, leaning on the panic button and shouting down his guest every step of the way. He's very wrong the way he does that, but that's another story. But he may or may not know that the same number of people will die from a lack of health insurance every 2 months as were killed on September 11th. Think about that. About 3,000 people every 60 days. 3,000 people every 60 days. That's another 9/11 every 60 days. And people are saying this isn't an emergency? Will die from lack of health insurance. Think about that. Think of the horror of 9/11 and how we all looked in horror and astonishment that 3,000 people lost their lives in a moment. Think about how we as a nation felt about that and how we reacted about it. What a horrible thing that was. To think that 3,000 people lost their lives. And 3,000 people lose their lives every 2 months, every 60 days because they don't have health insurance, and that's not something that is an emergency? That's something that we shouldn't weep about? That's something that we shouldn't have great concern about? The media has let us down terribly on this. And it just is frying my brain when I see people like Scarborough talk like that. And to know that the Republicans are so dirty, slimy, evil, vile, that they will send these thugs out to these meetings to disrupt them, to keep the public from knowing the truth, to pass out disinformation, to scare old people that they're going to be euthanized, to scare old people into thinking they're going to lose their Medicare, they're going to lose their Medicaid. They're doing this. They're sending out millions of emails. They're sending out mailers to people. They're speaking out, and people are afraid. And the politics of fear always works for Republicans, and they are the masters of it. They are the masters of it. I'm ashamed that we have people like that, not only living in America, but in positions of importance and leadership. I'm ashamed that we have people like that. I've always thought of Dick Armey as a vile, vile individual. But to know that now that he is officially behind these thugs that go out and disrupt these meetings, how could you live with yourself? Oh, they'll rationalize it somehow. They will rationalize it somehow. But the lies and distortions that these people are pushing every day, and we find that it's working for them. You know, the opponents of health and insurance reform are attacking like a swarm of locust or wasp or whatever. They actually are claiming that the House health care bill pushes suicide. Please. Lots of the emails about that cite former Republican Lieutenant Governor of New York, Bessie McKay, interview on a former senator and Republican presidential candidate, Fred Thompson's radio show on July 16th, and I'm butchering her name, McKay, who founded a group called the Committee to Reduce Infection Deaths in 2004, appeared on Thompson's program to discuss health care. Citing page 425 of the bill, McKay claimed that Congress would make it mandatory that every 5 years, people in the Medicare have a required counseling session that will tell them how to end their life sooner, how to decline nutrition, how to decline being hydrated, how to go into hospice care, all to do what's in society's best interest and cut your life short. And at least two Republican leaders have echoed that end-of-life distortion. Of course, our good friend, Republican Boehner of Ohio, the House Minority Leader, he released a statement, along with Republican Policy Committee Chairman Thaddeus McCotter of Michigan, saying that the bill would encourage euthanasia. Boehner, you bastard. How could you look yourself in the mirror in the morning? How could you do it? And the Family Research Council, they're saying that abortions will trump care for the elderly in a public plan. They're saying that the premiums could nearly double for those who buy their own insurance. Did you see that Fox Channel footage showing Arlen Specter and Kathleen Sebelius speaking in a town hall meeting to that mob? Crowd was booing their efforts to defend health care reform. Now they're pushing that, oh, he's going to have to raise taxes. They're going to raise all the fear that they possibly can, and they are. And I'm afraid some of the village idiots are going right along with it. I think the press has been woeful in their coverage of this. You know, Chris Matthews, I watch Chris Matthews now and then. It's, dinner time for me, and sit down and have a bite to eat and watch a little bit of Chris Matthews. And he doesn't seem to have a good grasp of it. Whatever Schultz says about it, I don't know. I don't watch the program. But I don't think we're getting our money's worth. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Why not give us a call? Talk to us about it. Let us know. You've got a small percentage of Wall Street Democrats in the Senate and the House that are, once again, and I say this to be fair. I am nothing if not fair on this program. When Democrats deserve it, they get it. We have Democrats, so-called Democrats, that really are attempting to sabotage this health care reform by trying to create another corporate welfare program. And that's exactly what they're proposing. It is corporate welfare. There isn't any question about it. They want to have taxpayer-subsidized health care for the 45 to 50 million uninsured with no cost controls. Let's head on. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello, this is David from Maine.
Hi, David. How are you? How are things in Maine today?
Well, they're all right. I was going to talk about what I saw happening in the media, and I don't know if you caught my call the other night, but I was basically talking about how everything is set up regarding legitimizing radicals, and I was talking about how Ann Coulter, before she was an op-ed right-wing columnist article editor, a lawyer, when she was that, she wasn't credible, and nobody paid attention to her. But because Bill Maher put her on over and over again and looped her every single week, she became a mainstay and a staple. And I guess what I'm saying is, as I was telling Bob this, I said we can track back Michelle Malkin in the same strategy. We legitimized her guy, and that's point blank. We did it. When you go back to the blog post, and you can see that she was a two-bit nothing. As soon as people started picking up and making her a tag statement on the blogs, that's how she got her book deal. And that's something that people don't know, guys. They don't realize that a lot of the kingmakers and queenmakers of media care about her outrage. That's why I say when you pick someone like an op-ed or someone who's the next shock sensationalist right-winger, you better be careful. And I try to tell people that, but they don't understand. And that's what I mean by legitimizing radicals. And it's the same way of how we have a lot of progressives who don't realize that what Bob Woodward was saying about how we let the radicals, we let the crazies out of the basement. They don't understand. We legitimized everything. We legitimized the war on terror. We legitimized torture. Anytime our side did that. But, you know, going back to...
But David, let me ask you a question. Now we've got Ann Coulter saying that Michelle Malkin isn't credible on this latest issue on the birther thing. What do you suggest that everybody does? Just don't ever say anything about them when they're in the news?
No, I don't suggest that. But what I'm saying is when you legit. Well, I guess what I'm getting at is when we talk about these people, we put them out in the open. And as I said to Bob, We put them on a street team. Now, you can do that with Michelle Malkin. You can do that with other people. But here's another problem, Bob. I mean, Guy. Today, I don't know if you noticed on the Drudge Report, but the White House came out and mentioned and showed that they were reading the Drudge Report. They don't understand. All Drudge cares about is hits and traffic revenue. His hits and traffic revenue just spiked because of what Linda Douglas showed on the video, that she looked at the Drudge Report and then he got it wrong. And now they're in an argument and it's all drawn out and it's dramatic and he gets more views and more ad revenue and they can toss that to Andrew Breitbart's site. And a lot of progressives, they don't understand this guy. We legitimize radicals. It's really that simple. And we keep legitimizing them over and over again. And that's the problem. We have people in the blogs and atmosphere, the op-ed columns. I'll even throw out Bill Maher's name. We take these people, we put them down, we sit them down like they're credible academics. And in the meantime, we have more stuff and more shit that we have to go on to, that we have to cover, that we have to analyze. That's just BS. And this is the problem. This is the problem we face. Every day that passes, and we have to continue on, and more people in the blogs and in the magazines, they continue to bring up these names. They just keep ascending them higher and higher. And I don't get it. I don't think the progressives understand it. We are street teaming for these people big time.
I don't know why though. I don't know why the White House would get in a pissing match with
I know why. I know why. Because the White House is arrogant, Guy. They don't understand. Look, for those people who are listening, Drudge isn't stupid.
No.
He was raised in the newspaper world, okay? His dad was an editor or he owned a paper. On top of that, he has his associates connects with all of the newspapers, the conservatives, and on the liberal side as well, on the people, so he understands how politics work in Washington. He was also a mailroom boy. I don't know if you knew that guy.
Yeah.
He was a mailroom boy. You're talking about someone who is a one-man corporation, basically. He runs it out of his apartment. I give it to him on that. He makes millions of dollars. And yet, every time a Democrat wants to take up Drudge, they always lose. And the reason why they lose is because all he cares about is traffic and ad revenue.
Right.
And here's the other thing, Guy. If it's proven wrong that what Obama said is wrong about the single-payer health care, it's going to make the Obama administration look stupid. So he plans this thing in advance. So if he has a statement and he has an archive, people need to pay attention. It's not good to pick a fight with Drudge.
Well, it's not good to ever pick a fight that you just can't win. You know, heads you lose, tails you lose. you can't win a fight with somebody like that. You just can't.
And what I'm saying is today, the White House just basically legitimized the Drudge Report all over again. I bet you their traffic is through the roof now. Checking out the Breitbart comments.
They had nothing to gain by doing that and everything to lose, the White House did.
I know. That's what I'm talking about. We're not dealing with people who are political brainiac super geniuses. We're dealing with people who think they know how to handle these situations, but they haven't really researched. They haven't researched the subjects. They haven't researched these characters. They're struggling to swim, Guy, and it's obvious. When I saw that video of Linda Douglas, and she actually showed the Drudge Report link, I was like, what are you doing? Are you stupid?
Yeah, I was taken aback by that as well. Didn't any question. You do wonder. These people are supposed to be pros. And that's just, you know, that's akin to, you know, I'm a big college football fan, and that's akin to a university like University of Florida playing the local Florida Gulf Coast University. If you beat them, everybody says, well, so what? And if you lose, it's like, oh, my God. And that's the situation the White House is in with the Drudge people today.
By the way, I did want to mention one other thing that I think is interesting. Chalmers Johnson put together an article on the 10 reasons 10 steps we can do to reduce our military, and it's pretty impressive.
Got a link for it?
At the Asia Times. I'll pass a link to you. But I was really found it really interesting how we would decide to set it up, and also the statistics that he built around it, and it was a really interesting read.
Well, it'd have to be a pretty honest read, because I think everybody knows we could definitely reduce the military by quite a bit. We got so much, pardon the pun, overkill.
It was a bleak assessment, and it kind of ties into what I was listening to last night with Jeremy Scahill on anti-war, when he was talking about the issue of contracting and private military, and he had this, and there was this interesting part of the interview where he says, I did talk to Russ Feingold, and I did ask him about the military bases, and he seemed to sidestep the question. He goes, and I guess a lot of people don't really understand how it works over in the Middle East, and he explained in detail that there are over, I think he said there are over 500,000 people currently, there are hundreds of thousands of people not accounted for, and they do that intentionally. Mm-hmm. And this is the problem that we look at, and those numbers don't go on the books that we're spending. So it's all allocated somewhere else, a different column. So when you read these statistics for military spending, you're seriously not getting a clear picture of it. And it's intentional. And this is the reason. And he goes into it. It's because it's the denial. Jeremy Scahill says it's the denial that we can't have an empire anymore.
Well, liars figure and figures lie. And God knows the government does enough of that.
Hmm. Yeah.
Sure do. Well, Dave, thanks so much for calling. Good to hear from you today. I wholeheartedly agree with your first point there about legitimizing some of these people. We have done that, and
I just want to mention one other thing regarding this. The media does this, and I think to an extent, a lot of the media understands this, but I don't think when it comes to the blog world and a lot of these op-ed people who play this game, did you hear what so-and-so said? Did you hear what, and they have a traffic of like 1,000 or 2,000 a month, 2,000 hits a month, and then it spikes out of control. They don't understand that they're basically becoming street teamers for these people, and they were intended for you to get outraged.
And
that's the problem, and that's a discussion we have to have.
And as the old saying goes, just make sure you spell my name right. You know,
right.
You're so right. When you stop and think about it, Malkin, we got Ann Coulter that came out of the Clinton thing. We've got, what's that gal on Fox that came out of the O.J. Simpson deal? Of course, Jonah Goldberg, where would he be without his mother, Lucianne, and yeah, get it, Greta Sussman.
Just one last thing regarding this. People should pay attention to the fact that a lot of the seed money in the right wing, it starts to decrease when the outrage isn't there, guy. These venture capitalists, they'll back off. Like, they have Pajamas Media TV right now. And because a lot of people, they don't have that star figure like they're looking for, like a quote-unquote Jon Stewart, they're still going through trial and error, and a lot of their funding has dried up, and they rely on memberships. But if someone was to take an outrage on any of these members and immediately just blow them out of the picture, see, this is what people don't know. Pajamas Media is owned and funded by Roger Simon, CEO Roger Simon. So if Roger Simon wants to kick in money as soon as he sees someone who is a visible mascot, he'll do that. And that's the problem. That's what Daily Coast doesn't get. That's what Fire Dog Lake doesn't get. They don't understand. Every time you mention any of these people, you're in street team city. You might as well drive around in a van stickered with their website link. Because that's all it comes down to, guy. The kingmakers and the queenmakers, they're out there, and they're watching, And as soon as someone has that visible reaction, they jump on it, just like they jumped on Howard Stern. For those that don't know, 50% of Howard Stern's audience, that's the reason why he became a star, because of the outrage and the letters and the phone calls. So there's a lesson for people to digest.
Certainly is. Certainly is. Dave, good to hear from you.
All right, later.
Call us again. We're going to take a short break. Be right back. A little something for ELO here.
Shoo-ba-doo, da-ba-da-doo-ba. Shoo-ba-doo, da-ba-da-doo-ba.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Boy, all the dancers on the dance floor and the chat room during that song, they really got out there. Wow. 866-546-5254. Got a question for you. Made some notes and now I lost my question. I'm so good at that, I really am. Wanted to ask you, because of conversations I've had with friends this past week, and people I know, and I'm talking about some bad, sad conversations, people who own businesses, people who have lost jobs, people are facing financial decisions and difficulties that they've never had in their lives, upstanding people, hardworking people, people that have never taken the public dime, have never had to. Are you in that category right now? Has your life changed significantly? What are you doing to hang on? Do you have enough money to pay your bills? Do you have decent health care insurance, or maybe even any insurance for that matter? Were any of you fortunate enough to be able to take advantage of that cash for clunkers thing? Had to have some money to buy a car even. Are you behind on your mortgage? I know many people who are. I know somebody, I won't mention his name, but going to be losing a home any day now. Credit card bills. Being swamped by those. Do I sound like one of those commercials? I don't mean to. I guess what I'm asking, how is your standard of living compared to, say, 3 years ago? Do you know anybody filing bankruptcy? Are any of you helping someone who's having a hard time? Are you an angel out there for people, for friends or acquaintances, friends or family? Have you provided a safety net for somebody who's lost their home, maybe needs housing? Very difficult time, and we talk about insurance on this program a lot as of late, but of course the reason a lot of people have insurance problems and health care problems is because of this economy that's descended upon us. It's an ugly situation, and I don't know when it's going to get better. There are some indications that maybe things have gotten a wee bit better. They talk about the stock market getting a little bit better. But, you know, I guess the big question always is when it comes to the stock market, to head off in a different direction here, when stocks rise on Wall Street, how does that benefit the average schmo out there struggling with unemployment? It doesn't. We had on Monday, stock prices went up again. They pushed the major indexes up 1%. And you had a lot of investors snapping up shares of natural resource companies and banks after the new data came in pointing to some signs of economic stabilization. And there are some signs. But before we look at unemployment, let's look at what's happening with rental and homeowner vacancy rates. I found a story about in Kansas City, rental vacancy rates rose from 11.9 to 15% over the past year. Homeowner vacancy rates nearly doubled, up from 2.1 to 3.8. And comparatively, the average homeowner vacancy rate in the country's 75 largest metro areas improved slightly from 3% to 2.7%, while the rental vacancy rate edged up to 10.2% from 10% a year ago. And Miami, which is not that far away from where I'm speaking to you right now, ranks number 8 in the country. They own a whopping 12.7% of rental vacancy rate. Huge. Up from 11.4 a year ago. They got residential towers sitting over there in the final stages of the boom, now standing empty. They're monuments to an overhyped market right downtown Miami. 40% of the homes available in Miami's city limits that are for sale are for foreclosures. Unemployment, and you know where that's going. And what's going to make things all better? We have former Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan saying that much of the economic recovery will depend on the housing market. And you know where the housing market is. It's in the toilet. And Greenspan saying that the recovery is going to depend on the housing market. So all you average guys out there and gals struggling with unemployment, the tradesters and the banksters, they may be kissing this recession goodbye. But for right now, you can kiss your ass goodbye. That's what it all boils down to, I'm afraid. Not pretty. What does it cost to rent a nice three-bedroom, two-bath home with a garage where you live in a nice community? Man, that can vary. There's all kinds of properties around here. Of course, we're in the epicenter of it. One of the highest foreclosure bankruptcy rates in the country right here, us, Lee County, Florida, and along with Phoenix and Las Vegas, we're perpetually in the top three. What an honor. Many of these foreclosures are being bought up in bundles by people that have money. Still don't see any light at the end of that tunnel. Just wondered if you did. Evidently not. Saw this story about GE. General Electric, owner of NBC, and of course MSNBC. And it's said that Keith Olbermann has, GE's made a deal with Fox to have Keith Olbermann stop his attacks on Bill O'Reilly. Have any of you heard about this? Olbermann has been ordered to stop his attacks on Bill O'Reilly? Really? Would Keith Olbermann obey an order like that? I have to tell you, I'd quit first. And I mean that. I would. It might be cutting off your nose to spite your face, but I would quit. You've got to have some ethics. You've got to have some principles to stand on. How could you obey an order to stop telling the truth? I didn't get to see his show last night, so I'll ask you to let me know if Keith has caved in on this issue. I don't know, but I heard it from several sources today. Well, good to see you on the chat room here. We've had several people respond to what it costs to rent a three-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage home. We're seeing in my area, that doesn't help out, $1,000 to $2,000, but where is that? In Massachusetts, $3,800 a month. Wow, that's kind of high. Texas Betsy says $1,600 there. Chicky Patriot says a two-bedroom apartment here starts at $1,200 if you don't want to dump. Interesting. What kills a lot of people around here is the maintenance fee for condos and stuff, gated communities and all. Man, some of them are very, very, very high. Very high. $300-$400 a month, up to $800-$900 a month. on some of these things for maintenance fees. Amazing what people will pay. Hey, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. But nobody wants to know him, they can see that he's just a fool. And he never gives an answer, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down. And the eyes in his head see the world spinning round. Well, on the way, head in a cloud, the man of a thousand voices talking perfectly loud. But nobody ever hears him or the sound he appears to make. And he never seems to notice, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning shows his feelings, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning
back with the Guy James Show down to the, my goodness, down to the last few minutes here. Don't know where the time goes on some of these days. I really don't. Just was mentioning on the chat room, looking forward to being at the Netroots convention next week in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I haven't been to Pittsburgh for quite a while, and I know the place fairly well. So it'll be good to go up there and maybe see some of you folks. Going to broadcast some information to you from the Netroots Nation convention. It should be interesting. There are going to be a lot of people there. And we'll be there to tell you the story, as always. Down to the last, what do we got? 4 minutes left in the program. Don't have time to really take a call right now and give anybody a decent amount of time. I do thank all of you for listening to the program today. We could use some help in defraying expenses for the Netroots deal. And if some of you are able to help out on that, I would appreciate it very much. I want to thank Sophie for helping out. I want to help Larry for helping out. And many of you. I'm going to have to raise that list up here, you know, some of these days. It's not a big list, believe me. And I know, because things are very difficult right now. But we could use your help trying to finance this trip to Pittsburgh to bring you some good programs from there. You're going to do that. You can do that over at theguyjamesshow.com, and we hope you will. We I promise you it'll be spent wisely. Had a lot of things I was going to talk about that I never got around to today, and we'll do that the rest of the week. We've got plenty of time tomorrow and the next day and the next day. I'm going to try and avoid TV tonight. I don't know how much more of this stuff that I can watch with these people out there, with these professional people who are out there. You know, I'm talking about the Brooks brothers. I can't even talk. The Brooks brothers riot down in Miami during the Gore-Bush election. Got the same thing going on now with even worse tactics. And I don't know how much more of that I can watch. It's an ugly thing to see. I don't mind people being rabble-rousers. I don't mind people raising Cain. I don't mind that at all. But it's when it's a planned effort like this to shout down people who want to stand and explain something and tell you the truth, then it's wrong. It's just wrong. And I hope people will resist that as much as possible. I hope those that are at those meetings will do all they can to shout down the people who are down trying to shout down the speakers. It's an ugly, ugly mess. Well, thanks for listening today. This is the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. Always proud to be with you. And I do want you to remember that you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.